and welcome to Cruisin' for Ebrevusin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I'm joined once again by Lauren.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back.
Oh my God, I've missed you so much. Like, what the hell is this life?
Well, we're here now and you're back as my now most featured guest on the podcast.
Oh my God, Ethan, this is an honor. I am willing. I'll go get one of my many crowns and put it on my head.
So I've picked you specifically for this episode. So we're getting down really to the pointy end of how many movies I have left. And this was one that I was really, I don't know if nervous is the right word for it, but I wanted to treat this differently to pretty much every other Tom Cruise movie we've done because of the sensitive nature involved in the story. Would you mind just telling me why I picked you and your...
And the film? Yeah. So today we are reviewing Rain Man. And the reason why is that I was recently diagnosed with autism. Go figure. I found out last year and this year I am 33. Like last year I turned 32. Was it last year? Holy shit. Yeah, so I have known I am autistic for not even a year and wish I'd known a little bit earlier. But because of this and because of the nature of an 80s film and representation and what it was made looked like, I want to say, I don't want to trip over my words too much. I'm here to help.
I mean, all along, I wanted to try and find someone who may have had autism or at the very least had experience with working with people who have autism or something. And it was hard. Like, I didn't want to just do a shout out on, hey, any of you people with autism want to be a podcast with me? I know that felt weird when my podcast is about Tom Cruise. But then I was like talking to you about it and you're like, I haven't actually seen that movie. I'm like, holy shit.
Oh my God. Because I know that's part of it. Like, you have to have not seen the film.
Yeah.
Like, and conveniently,
I've had a couple lately where people have seen the movie, but I didn't want to make a habit of it. So this worked perfectly. So
I'm so glad. Yeah. I think my tendency to lean into both horror films and sci-fi have really helped because I've barely watched dramas. I forget they exist. I'm like, are there ghosts? Fucking nah.
Is there an explosion or is there some sort of grisly murder? I don't want to know about it.
Oh, Yawnsville. Huh. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about this film that you'll hear about.
I hear about them.
Oh boy. Look, I want to preface this by quoting a friend of mine, Clem Basto, who actually also was diagnosed late in life with autism. What she says is inaccurate representation is still representation and you've got to take things with a grain of salt. But that said, I will absolutely tell you my thoughts on this film.
That's
and
fine.
You know me, my default is positive, but it was tricky. It was tricky.
Yeah. Like, I mean, what's the thing? We can talk about it as, you know, I mean, I have the luxury of being able to talk about just as a movie, whereas the intersection of autism and the movie is very different for you.
Oh, yeah. So let me tell you about the autism, the ride, the experience. Yeah.
Like, I can talk about, like, I enjoy the movie. It makes me very angry, but probably in a different way to you, because this is one of Tom Cruise's most unlikable roles, I think.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he is really unlikable in it. And it's
up until, like, the very end when he finally goes,
I've been a cunt this whole time. Yeah. Not to spoil it, but, you know.
Hopefully I'm aware enough of how ASD works from the many friends I now know who have it. So the one good thing about COVID is that everyone figured out some shit about themselves.
100%. No, if I hadn't been locked down, I wouldn't have gone through what I went through to go and get diagnosed. So I have a very exciting concoction of autism spectrum disorder and I have ADHD, which is why it wasn't clocked when I was a kid, because when you have ADHD, you're actually really social. You always, like, look for things to excite your brain, because what ADHD is, they're realizing now, is a lack of dopamine. So you're working overtime to produce it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I don't know, it's like going on a roller coaster and it makes you excited, but it's like that every day for every life things. The other thing I want to say is that I am not an autistic savant, which is the particular representation we see in this film, you know, and a lot of autistic people aren't savants. A lot of us just go round about and do their things. And then, well, in my case, don't realize they're autistic until later. In my case, because I'm AFAB. I love saying AFAB because it makes me sound like I am fabulous. So
it does.
I was assigned female at birth, and thus a lot of girls were missed in the 90s because of the nature of autism and ADHD presenting themselves very differently. And also, they work together to mask one another. So like I said, I'm very outgoing because of my ADHD, whereas a lot of people who do get clocked as having autism struggle with social situations. Da-da-da! And that is autism chat for now.
Well, I was going to ask you as well. Mm. This movie is set in a time where autism is definitely not known like it is now. And it didn't seem to be, I mean, they talk about in the movie it being a spectrum, but to them a spectrum is the character in this, who we'll talk about soon, who has autism. They're actually like, he's high functioning on the lower end of the spectrum
because he's verbal. That's a weird one to say.
Which now we realize that's like a tiny fraction of the spectrum we probably know now.
Oh, yeah. The best way the spectrum can be summarized is, I think a lot of people think of the spectrum as a flat line, but what the spectrum actually looks like is a color wheel. So, you know, those when you like drag your mouse around, those colors.
Yep.
So when you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person, and that is a quote from one of my favorite autistic podcasts called 1800 Seconds on Autism. For example, I might exist over in pink, whereas a friend of mine who's also autistic might exist over in green. We're still in the same spectrum, but it looks very different. And that is the most helpful thing I've ever had explained to me. I think the internet, there was a diagram on the internet, and I was like, oh, that helps me understand it. And that's how I've been explaining it to family and friends as well, because everyone has a line in their brain, but really, color wheel is probably a bit more accurate.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't know that one. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. And also another thing they talk about in this, actually, no, it was, I was watching the behind the scenes, and they had like a little mini documentary on the Blu-ray about autism. And they had people who actually were like actual psychiatrists and everything who specialized in autism talking about stuff. But it was, the languages were still so different to what we are used to today. But they were talking about how they're portraying someone who is autistic savant, but being savant, which we mostly think of as being an autistic thing, is you can be savant and not autistic. Like they're...
Oh yeah, like the autistic savant is like not mutually exclusive. Like for sure. No, not at all.
Also, because the guy that Dustin Hoffman, who plays the character with autism, he spent time with is a savant, but I don't think he had autism. I think he had some other intellectual disability.
Oh, yeah.
It might have been neuro. No, I think it was intellectual. I can't remember exactly. I should have checked it out. Yeah, they're just talking about that. And this movie, although far from perfect, by looking into it, I did actually learn a lot of stuff that, I actually did know. And I thought I knew a bit more than I did until I started actually looking into this and watching some stuff about Rain Man.
Oh, for sure. I'm glad you watched the documentary because I had no idea. Like, I just watched it on one of the streaming services. But, so I haven't looked at the documentary. I haven't seen anything like that. I just, you know, looked at this film at face value and I was like, it's Tom Cruise. I'm going to love it. But also, we'll see what happens. There's some interesting stuff that I learned from my psychologist who also specializes in ASD. And in regards to... So what autism spectrum disorder is primarily, and I could be wrong because I only just found out, so I don't know a lot of stuff either. I'm still learning too. It is cyclic thinking. And what my psychologist was saying, that it can be more obvious or more apparent if it is also paired with an intellectual disability. So what people consider high functioning used to be called Asperger's, and then everything else would be known as like autistic. But high functioning isn't really used so much anymore. It's just used, you just say autism because it's a concoction of things that make you more autistic. And all high functioning really is how good you are at masking. But at the end of the day, you still struggle with things because you're autistic. So it's a funny old thing. I've had people be like, oh, is autistic... People think like the word autistic is offensive. I guess that comes down to the person. I personally love knowing I'm autistic. I wish I'd known sooner.
Mm.
So yeah, just autistic or ASD, autism spectrum disorder. Those seem to be the most common ones that are used. But yeah, using like things like high functioning or low functioning or all that sort of stuff is sort of... Obviously it's used in this film because it was, you know, made in the 80s, but that's being left by the wayside as well.
So I have just had a quick look and the character is based off of a man called Kim Peek. He had savant syndrome, so no, he did not have ASD. He I cannot say that, macrocephaly, a condition that causes head to be abnormally large. So he had a physical disability that resulted in neurological disability and affected his brain, but basically he had incredible memory.
He
could read 2 pages of a book at once, and he could remember, he could read a phone book and know.
Whoa, yeah, that's
everything
incredible.
That's
hectic. But also it's not autistic.
No.
I mean, like, it's savant syndrome, but that's really interesting as well. Let's review this movie, Rain Man.
Okay, so we'll go through the characters a little bit ahead of time. Tom Cruise is playing Charlie Babbitt, who is like this complete asshole. He like yuppie kind of dude who does great imports of like luxury cars like Lamborghinis. Mm. That's how we're introduced to him. Then there's Dustin Hoffman, who plays Raymond Babbitt, who is his brother that he never knew existed from a very bit of a shitty dad.
Yeah, it sounds like a very distant father, but it also seems like the apple may have not have fallen far from the tree in a lot of ways.
Yes.
That's a funny old thing. Yeah.
Then there's Susanna, who is Charlie Babbitt's girlfriend. She's Valeria Golino, who is a very stunning Italian woman. There's a few other characters, but apart from the doctor of Raymond Babbitt, which is Dr. Bruner, it's a road movie, so we don't stick with a lot of characters for very long.
It's very focused on our main
Charlie and Raymond
and their interactions. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, because we're probably going to have a lot to talk about because of who we are as people and friends.
because of the fact that we can't shut our big gobs.
Can't shut up for 5 fucking minutes, no.
I wish to be mysterious, but I lack the ability to shut my fucking mouth. Very good. Turns out it's autism. Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't think we'll go like hectic into detail. Yes. I say that, we'll try. I always end up falling into that trap. Like the last episode I did, I was like, you're going to skim through things, Kara. And then I'm like, and here is the pedantic details of this scene. Like, God damn it.
The paint chip on the wall in the background of the motel that represents my fractured soul. What? Calm down.
Shut the
fuck up. Maybe they just couldn't afford to fucking do set dressing, you dumb shit. All right, good times. Anyway.
Could you imagine if I was like that? Oh, Lord. The movie set up by, we see Charlie just being an absolute asshole trying to import these fucking Lamborghinis, I'm pretty sure. So his girlfriend and another guy works for him and he's making them lie to...
Yeah, and they're like working the phones for sure. Like it's like it's set up in a warehouse as well.
So basically they are trying to get the EPAs tested, which is like how much pollution they emit. And they're being held up because they're probably Lamborghinis gas guzzlers? I should know that.
I have no idea. I don't even know how to drive, so...
Because they're being imported from Italy, the EPA standards are different between countries. Anyway, big hold up. When he thinks it's going to go right or good, he's like, all right, girlfriend, we're going to Palm Springs. Let's bounce. So they start driving and we see pretty clearly how much of an asshole he is by the argument that they have in the car.
Oh, man.
He's really deep in thought and because she's Italian and... Mm. English isn't her first language, she has a little bit of trouble expressing herself, which I think was actually a very clever thing to do in this movie because he has to explain things to her a little bit more because she's struggling to keep up with everyone talking really fast in English. So it's really good for exposition.
It's funny, I didn't get that as much. She just felt really open. Like she's a really open person. And so she's like, got to talk about feelings, got to do these things. He frustrated me so much. He reminds me of someone I used to date who just would not... at all. Like we'd have arguments like that where I was like, I need to know how you're feeling, and then they would lie about how they were feeling. So it was like you never really got to know them. So I like really empathized with her in that. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, like that is a stressful situation to be in.
So as they're having their little argument and he's being a absolute pain in the ass, he gets a phone call on his excellent car phone. I'm like, yes, the 80s. The giant
whole center console. My suitcase. So good. What a flashback.
And you think about how tiny our phones got and now they're like almost suitcase sized again because we're like, I have to have a computer at all times.
I require a tiny screen in the palm of my hand so that I may watch my anime. Or if you're the man who was on the tram today, my YouTube songs with no headphones in really loudly. Just, cool. Why not? Oh, I just can't wait to hear some fucking Dido on my way to work. Cheers, mate.
What is this, fucking 1999?
Oh no. Go, I hope your Discman runs out of battery, mate. That's you shithead.
Imagine you should have said to him, like, could you please turn your Discman down a bit? It's too loud.
I'm sorry, sir, but how did I just frisbee it out the window?
So giant phone gets a phone call. He just gets told that his father has died and he's like emotionless, which, Susanna's like, what the fuck? Like, you just found out your dad's dead. And she's like, so. He's like, we're going to have to go to the funeral. And they turn around and they head straight to the funeral. Susanna's going with him, even though he doesn't want her to. Well,
yes.
Because that's what you do with your fucking partner. You're like, this thing happened.
Got to be here. Got to play support, even if you've had a little fight. There are certain things that are just more important in the moment, and that's okay.
Which, when the way he reacts to it, like, about her coming, and she's like, well, I know, I want to come. You know that if it happened to her, like, if her parent died, even if she didn't like that parent, he would be like, all right, see you later. Like, he wouldn't have gone with her. Like,
It doesn't feel feel like a very mutual partnership.
Yeah.
She feels like she's doing a lot of emotional labor for this very silly man who cannot express his emotions.
All of the emotional labor.
Pretty much all of it. Ooh, that explains why she was so fit. Like, ooh, yeah. Guns. Yeah.
All the baggage on her shoulders and this cunt.
Ooh, God, could carry all your emotional baggage, babe. Got this. Bene, bene. Oh, yeah. I don't remember when he explains, like, about his dad.
So they go to the dad's house and he's obviously quite wealthy. One of the things she comments on, which we'll come back in a moment, is that she comments on, like, oh, someone should be watering those roses. They're all dying. So, yeah, beautiful big manor style house. And she, yeah, probes him a little bit about why. Actually, no, she doesn't even have to probe him. They see the beautiful old Buick Roadster in the garage. And he admits that he was 16 years old. Mm. He always wanted to drive this car. His dad would never let him. And whatever grade he was in, he got like all A's and he was really proud of himself. So he asked his dad, would you let me drive the car as a reward? And the dad's like, nope. And so he's like, all right then. And he and his friends went for a little joyride.
Yes.
And they got busted, but not because they were doing anything wrong. It's because the dad immediately reported it stolen. And
all the kids
got chucked into jail, immediately bailed out by their parents, obviously. But his dad left him in for two days.
Yeah, absolutely, so 2 days. In my notes, his dad, Lord, all these men are yikes. That was it. That was what I wrote for that. I was like, that is such a yikes moment. And so you understand, like, he was a 16-year-old kid and he wasn't even just shown, like, that's not tough love. That is just like straight up belligerent piece of shit parenting. Yeah, it's so awful. Oh my God. Yeah. Oy.
Saw something in a doco that's like, discipline without love is tyranny. I'm like, yeah, that's what that was. That's actually a great way
to put it. These men, they're yikes.
Yeah. And so like, now you produce this piece of shit son who then just moved out of home and never contacted his dad again. And now his dad's died. And he also admits that his dad tried to reach out to him a few times and he was just like, nah.
I think he's well within his rights for that as well. I don't know. Like, it's a movie. I can't. My brain's like, what would I do in this situation? I was like, I talk to my dad all the time. So,
And I, as someone who doesn't talk to their dad for less than that, I don't know. Like, maybe if my dad reached out to me, I would respond. But we're at that point where my dad doesn't reach out to me because he's being stubborn. So, I'll continue being grouse over here without you.
Oh, yeah, big mood. I think I've ever had a tiff with my dad. Usually we just both take a little bit of time to cool down. I didn't talk to him once for a year because he was mean to me at Christmas. But then I was like, whatever.
You're like, you learnt your lesson, Dad.
Oh, you learnt your lesson. What if your actions had consequences? But I love you. Okay, that's cool. But yeah, what are parents? If not here to cause us a little bit of stress but also love us, ?
Exactly.
Want to say they rock up somewhere and Val, his partner, Converse pink pants. Can we talk about that outfit?
Yeah.
Fucking hot. Love it.
So this is the sort of thing I notice now that I actually watch movies and write things down, is seeing a woman dressed really casually and in sneakers, you do not see that in movies very much.
No.
You might see that
everyone
more now.
Was in heels.
But even in real life, like, sneakers have not been a feminine fashion staple until really recently. Like,
totally,
sneaker culture
was
never for women. So, I mean, they're just Converse. So I'm not talking about, like, fucking Air Jordan high tops. But to see that. So, I was just, I'm like, what a great outfit.
What an icon, killing it before her time. I really, really liked that. That was really good.
He actually mentions his imaginary childhood friend, Rain Man.
Oh, Rain Man.
Around this time as well. And kind of letting us ponder that. We do find out who Rain Man is very, very soon. You could probably work it out by the name Raymond.
I didn't. I fucking did it. I didn't work it out. I was like, oh my God. I think as well, when I think of the name Raymond, I think of Rayman, like the Nintendo character.
I get that.
Little floaty arms, like, this comes and smacks you. Hush up.
He goes to the reading of the will. The dad was obviously angry that Charlie never made contact, so he leaves him the car as like a bit of a final fuck you.
Sick burn, right? Like, are you happy now?
Yeah. And the rose bushes, which we established, are dying. So obviously Charlie's furious.
Ooh.
Like, and he would be, like, he later figures out, like, he got what he deserved, but in that moment he's furious. And I think anyone would be, like, even if you were estranged from your family and you got that fuck you and you couldn't retaliate, like, you'd be furious.
Totally. And it's like, it's a funny little thing because in that moment, obviously I'm watching it like, well, you're both estranged from one another, yet you still feel entitled. So it's just, that was really interesting. I'm sure, like, I mean, obviously it shows that the apple didn't fall far from the tree because, it's a funny thing. Like, it's complex. He felt entitled about the car. car. Dad was a piece of shit about it, so everybody did the wrong thing. And then that entitlement carried through to adulthood, which is like, I don't know, you'd kind of hope that someone would have learnt a bit by then, but his dad obviously didn't either, because he was mean as hell to the last.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Like, the dad could have learnt, I'm your dad, which is something I'd love to fucking tell. Hey, Dad, if you're listening, grow up a little bit. But like, the dad could have gone, I'm the father in this situation. Yes, my child is adult and grown, but at some point I'm going to have to let that go because it's my child. And didn't. Charlie's like, he's still a kid. He's only like, what is he like, 23 in this? Like, Tom Cruise is only like 23 or something in this movie.
Shit, really?
And he's quite young.
I didn't think about it. Yeah. Oh man, of course. Yeah. Damn. I suppose.
Oh, 25 maybe. But 25. Yeah. But he's playing a character in his early 20s. So, yeah, like, of course he's not going to be over it, and he's going to be, it's been less than 10 years to him. So I think they both have big faults to play. The dad could have fucking grown up and, you know.
Yikes.
Yeah,
yikes,
big yikes.
Friend.
I think that's any way to. Charlie goes on a mission to find out. So he's told basically everything else is left to a trust for someone else, for an anonymous beneficiary to have the money, which is about $2 million worth, which I imagine in late 80s money would be. $10 billion.
Yeah, $1,000 billion. A lot of money. More money than I'll ever fucking see, to be honest. So.
$2 million. I'm like, whoa, if that's a lot of money. I'm like, wait, that's 80s money. Shit.
That's the big buck. That's the McDuck money, that is.
Imagine what you could buy in the 80s for $2 million. Christ.
Oh, my God. All the pink pants and Converse you could imagine. All right.
Just so many, like, so many diamond-encrusted Converse. Wow.
That would be it.
He manages to find out by sweet talking like a bank teller somewhere. Basically, it's going to Walbrook, which is a mental institution, and he goes talk to, I guess, the head doctor, Dr. Bruner, there. And Dr. Bruner was actually quite close friends with Charlie's dad. Mr. Babbitt, we'll call him. So
Daddy Babbitt. We're going to call him Daddy Babbitt. Daddy Babbitt.
No,
come on.
We didn't even see him. So actually, I noticed in one of the photos,
he doesn't deserve Daddy.
In one of the photos, they've basically photoshopped Mr. Babbitt to look like a cross between Tom Cruise and, oh fuck, I just forgotten who the other guy, Dustin Hoffman.
Oh my god, neat, like, I want to see that photo so bad.
Photo manipulation.
Please put that up on the Instagram. Oh my god.
He goes through, they're wandering through the institution, and you can see like all the people they encounter there obviously have various intellectual disabilities. When I read up on it, it's like a mental institution for people who are, you know, clinically insane or what have you. But
clinically insane or intellectually.
But we don't, all we see are the people who, you know, they encounter someone with Down syndrome and like those kind of things. So yeah, when I think of a mental institution, I usually think of a place where people who are severely mentally unwell.
Yeah, and unfit to look after themselves, thus. Yeah, or potentially a danger as well to the public, which is, but it's so strange because I suppose this is like, there are like homes that just provide care and there are also carers. So like a lot of people a lot of people who struggle with autism are intellectual disabilities that mean that they can't do things on their own, usually like have carers or have like support workers. So I don't know what that looked like in the 80s, but I felt like that was something that, I don't know, just worth mentioning.
I think America in the 80s, I think even America now, if you don't know what to do with your child who isn't functioning the way you expect them to, just dump them in a home
that's so rough.
Just let them live on the streets and stuff. Like, I imagine in America it's rough.
Yeah, let us know, US friends.
How grim is it over there if you have any kind of neurodivergence?
I mean, it's not great over here either. Like, trying to get an NDIS is like horrible and invasive. I mean, like, obviously the system is very, very problematic. It's like chronic illnesses and then having to prove that you're still chronically ill, even though it's a chronic illness and a lifelong chronic illness. Like, it's so invasive. And people have to do that almost like once a year. Yeah, no. And then sometimes they change the criteria. So your chronic illness that you've received support for might not meet the criteria anymore. And it's like, oh my God. So it's a time.
Also have the awesome part where some services jack up their prices, and that's what they're charging the government for to be part of the NDIS scheme. So all that fucking money's being wasted.
And filthy claws.
Like,
that's another podcast.
That's another podcast. Lauren and Cara railing against the fucking government.
Ooh. the government. Speaking of which, when Tom Cruise first appeared in this film, not to go back too far, to the very beginning, that is, my first note was, dang, Tom, because he looked hot.
Oh, he's looking great. I stuffed up. I always thought The Firm was the first movie where he had his monobrow waxed. It's this movie. His little monobrow's gone in this. Yeah.
His little money. His little buddy. I like him. I like him with the snaggle teeth too. I just think he's darling.
Oh, no, I think it's endearing.
Oh, very, very. I mean, like, I also love David Bowie, and David Bowie had rough teeth for his whole entire life. He only got his teeth fixed because he got crowded mouth and he started having like issues with them because, like, I mean, he had enough money to get his teeth fixed in the, like, since forever.
He's like,
Yeah, he's like, I don't know, this is my face. I'm like,
he's like, I'm British. It's what we have and what we do.
This is what we've got going for us. It's our uniqueness. it's our uniqueness. Hey, David Bowie. I don't know.
Big book of like. British smiles.
all right, that's enough.
We were like an hour in and we're like, we're after the part where we meet Raymond.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. Big mood. Sounds about right. Yeah.
While Charlie and Dr. Bruner are discussing the trust account thing. What's her name? Why am I so bad at names today?
Val.
Val is just sitting in the car waiting. She's obviously been dismissed.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like, just hang out in the car. What the fuck? Like.
Cool, dude.
You can't see my quizzical face, but I'm like, all right, I'll just hang out here before the internet was invented, so I can't bitch about it on my secret Instagram. I'll just
sit here quietly in the fucking.
It is quietly. I'll just read the phone book. Thanks. Like, oh, fuck. More Charlie Babbitt, you chode. Yeah, anyway.
You're hot, but you're a chode. But this is where we...
I think I wrote Jesus fucking Christ, this fucking guy. Yeah, I did. Charlie Babbitt.
Like, 10 minutes into the movie and we're already like, what?
Tom Cruise? The fuck is wrong with this guy? All right.
Raymond has gotten to the car with her. Hang on.
He does.
Oh, no. So her name's Susanna. Val is her real name.
Oh, whoops.
That's all right. Fucking.
Val?
At least one of us. Susanna.
You're right. Yeah, thank God. I was like, oh, what am I?
Doesn't matter.
Susanna. Yes. Susanna being a turbo babe.
Susanna is just sort of listening to him talk, and he's talking about how he can drive the car. And when Charlie comes down, he's like, what the fuck? You're doing it in my car.
Oh, yeah. He's so mean.
He's so mean. And like, because he's so already mean. Like, is he mean to the kid that he encounters with Down syndrome and like, just fucking king asshole.
God.
But they realize that Raymond seems to know a lot about this car. Like, specifically, the seats used to be brown. And Charlie's like, oh, the seats did used to be brown. Who are you? Meanwhile, Dr. Bruner's standing on the steps and he's like, he's your brother. And this is how we find out.
Dun, dun.
And Charlie's like, what? Yes. I don't have a brother?
Fuck. Yeah. And also, what the fuck, guys? imagine hiding a family member because of the nature of their intellectual and, like, or just their neuro disability. Like, what the fuck? The 80s. Also, like, further proving that Charlie and Raymond's dad was a fucking cunt.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Big swears coming out of my
mouth.
Like,
as much as Charlie is a big shit cunt, like, his dad has done a tremendous amount of awfulness to him. And Charlie's is the way he is because of that.
Yes, 100%. And also, like, I just imagine hiding a whole family member.
Yeah, and like, we find out pretty quickly that, well, not pretty quickly, but later in the movie, but we find out that Raymond actually did live with them for a while, and he actually ended up getting sent to the institution because they thought he was going to hurt Charlie's
a
baby.
Be a danger.
With hot water in a hot bath, so.
Yes. Like, accidentally, they thought.
Or Charlie, who was probably close with his brother, because he's only like a toddler when it happened. That's why he doesn't remember.
Yes.
Except for this idea of this imaginary friend, Rain Man. Yeah, like, that's devastating. Like, oh, not only did you hide this from me, but I was aware of it, but you just hid it from me? Like, it's fine.
It's like, and also, like, just, like, I don't know, just, like, isolating a family member? Isolating them from one another for no good reason.
Mm.
So he's like, oh, whoa, so, like, this is legit my brother, what the hell? And then they go into Charlie's room, and that stresses me out. So this is something I related to.
But, yeah, when Charlie's in...
Oh, sorry, Raymond's room, not...
Yeah, when Charlie goes into Raymond's room, like, you could be the most neurotypical person on earth, and I feel like even... This would stress most people out. It is so fucking stressful.
Yes. Oh my God. Just like touching all his shit.
Yeah. And like clearly Raymond's distressed.
Really making him anxious. Oh my God. Like he's like moments away from meltdown. Like it's awful. And as well as like autistic meltdown is basically when you get a bit overloaded by everything. And you essentially either, there's lots of different ways it can come out. Sometimes autistic meltdown can look quite violent. Like people might hit their head or want to scream or make loud noises. Or you kind of get like the other version of that, which is like get autistic like shut down.
Yeah.
Like not uncommon. So autistic shutdown is like you become nonverbal, which is like you stop talking. And that actually happens to me as well. Like if I get too overwhelmed, I start making little humming noises and I have to like point at things around the room to my partner. And it just means I have to lie down and be like in a dark room. And it's just until the feeling of great overwhelmness, the overwhelming feeling goes away.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can see like Charlie is like absolutely like triggering that in Raymond. And it's like, oh, it's so stressful. Like touching my stuff and being really disrespectful. Like it's so dehumanizing.
It's so dehumanizing. Like, he's like, God. He doesn't consider this guy like a full human. So he's just going to do this because like if you did that to anyone, that would be upsetting. So to do it to someone in like,
be fisticuffs.
While the care, his main carer is there explaining why what he's doing is bad.
Yes. And still ignoring it because of course, oh my no, that laugh specifically. Or I think this is also where I wrote, Jesus Christ, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
I have that written down. Yeah, what the hell?
But this scene is really good because they manage to explain a lot. So when Raymond is really stressed out, he continually does the comedy skit, Who's On Next?
Yeah, this is the cyclic thinking and also having like rituals to calm yourself down. I guess like the way I would relate to that is like I will watch Labyrinth, I'll watch a movie that I'm really familiar with because I know exactly what's going to happen and I can like quote it word for word, which is essentially what Raymond is doing as well. Like he's quoting something that he really enjoys word for word to calm him down.
Yes.
Calm himself down. So really interesting. And I was like, I think people do that, like probably have like a comfort film. But for me, I'll like watch something that's really familiar or listen to the same album over and over again or the same song.
We also find out another thing he does, if he likes someone and Raymond really likes Susanna, he asks them if they are on prescription medication, which is obviously a very weird question to out of nowhere. But that's his thing is like, I like you, so I ask you if you have prescription medication.
That too is relatable because I don't know, when I meet other autistic people or I meet other neurodiverse people, we just trauma dump on one another. We'll just be like, oh yeah, that happened to me. And we'll talk about what anxiety medication we're on and stuff like that. Like it's no big deal, but it's, I guess that's once again, for me, that's like, we just speak the same language. So it's not taboo to ask.
Mm.
And if you know somebody else is autistic, you know that that's probably an okay question to ask because you're in it together. It's like a camaraderie thing.
And yeah, I guess Raymond, he could ask that to someone where he lives in a mental institution and they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm on this and this because that's what they know.
Oh,
and
yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is how I can connect with you. This is a question I am comfortable and interested in. Anyway. Yes. I think that's really, really nice. I don't know. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So, I mean, look, this representation is a time, but there's lots of little things that I will pick out positively at like that. That is like something I'm like, oh, I see that. Yes.
Yeah. Basically, the scene is just establishing different behaviors that Raymond has and different ways that he copes, you know, setting up that if he gets too stressed out, he will have a meltdown and things like that. This scene, while incredibly fucking stressful, is very important because we learn a lot about things that start happening along the way. So from this point on, Charlie essentially kidnaps Raymond.
Oh, he does. He really does. And it's so fucking stressful.
In fact, essentially is softening it too much. He literally kidnaps
really does. He really, really does. It's like, essentially holds ransom for the
He kidnaps
the
for
money.
Ransom.
And I was like, don't get me wrong, I was like not into Tom Cruise in this movie. And then that happens and I was like screaming what the fuck at the television. How have I not seen this film? And also questions like, how would I have found this film before I knew I was autistic? Is another one. I mean, like, these are questions I can never answer because I can't go back in time like that. But I'm like, oh my God, like watching this is, holy shit. So they kidnap him and sneak him away to...
Start driving away and go to a hotel up the road.
Yes, and then follows some very uncomfortable scenes.
It's just, we see things like they don't understand what he has set meals, set snacks. He does things that way, like he eats his cheese puffs with a toothpick, which to me sounds like an excellent way to eat things. I was like, oh, toothpicks.
Honestly, awesome. And it's so funny, like I get particular about shit like that. Like I know like there's stuff that was overlap between neurotypical stuff. I think it was actually like, it was something on my autistic questionnaire. Like obviously it's a lot vaster than this, but it was like, if you go to a restaurant, do you just order the same meal? And I'm like, yes. I know a lot of people do that, but it's like, if you know exactly what you're gonna get. But here's the thing, if that's not available, I get really confused because I now, my expectation that I'd led up to that was so set has now been taken away from me, and my brain, rather than going, oh, I'll just get this instead, it's no big deal, it goes, wait, now what do I do, for way too long because I'd already got caught on one idea. So that's like, for my autism, that's a low level like autistic thing that happens. So the fact that he does really set stuff, I'm I'm like, oh yeah, I know what this looks like.
And he's been living like the last, 20 something years in an institution where each day is a certain meal. And like, even if he was, you know, wasn't autistic savant, I think that would be a huge, like, that's the feeling I got. So
rituals and routine are like a huge thing about being autistic. Yeah, autistic. Yeah.
When you go somewhere different, like you're going on holiday, like this doesn't affect me. I remember it affected me a lot more when I was younger. Like when I first had my first full-time job, like the complete change in routine and everything, like it set me off in panic. I don't get panic attacks very often, but I had so many fucking panic. And so, yeah, when you're overseas or something and something is so different, just have that weird feeling in your chest. You're like, you know that I can get past this, but you're still like a tight knot in your chest. And I had that in Sympathy, because can you imagine how that would feel?
Yes, you get the anxiety thing. Oh yeah, no, for sure. And like knowing what's coming next. Autistic people often do this thing called scripting, and it's where we know what to expect. So we have this thing called autistic scripting, and that means that we are trying to like set up an expectation and what to expect. I love routine. I'm really bad at keeping it because I have ADHD, which means my brain goes everywhere, but routine like is very good for me. So it's like on Saturday I go to work, and on Sunday I go to work, and on Monday I go to work. We go to the same cafe every Tuesday. So there's lots of that. There's stuff that can be done around that. The stuff that can be done around that is like a free square, but I like have very certain things that I like done, and I get particular about things as well. Obviously not in the same way, because once again, very different version of autism, and also just a really, I don't know, like it's one of those things where, because I'm not autistic savant, and this movie is so old, I know they were trying their best, but it still comes across like, oh no, I know what it is. And it might be too early to say this, but a point I'd like to bring up is that the narrative of this film is told from a person who isn't autistic. And the point of the film is they become a better person by spending time with someone who is autistic, but the whole time they're fucking tormenting them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, so it's like, I guess like, you know, as well, Sia, I didn't see that movie that Sia had, where the girl has the buttons. She only has 6 buttons. Autistic people, like, if they are nonverbal, they can have, like, machines that do that talking for them. The best explanation I got from somewhere was, anyone follow Bunny the dog? Bunny the talking dog? The buttons? That dog has 80 buttons. That's a fucking dog.
Yeah, right?
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, anyway, often these films aren't framed around the autistic experience from an autistic person's point of view. They're explained or shown from a perspective of how autism interacts with the neurotypical. And that really pisses me off. As well, this is how autism is diagnosed, by how it interacts and interrupts other people's lives.
Yeah.
So if you're autistic in class and you're being disruptive or you're not getting it, it's basically like, oh, well, you're being a menace to the class because you have ADHD or you're autistic. It's not about what the child actually is going through and what they're thinking about and what support they need. It's more about how can they be less disruptive. I know that's changing now, but throughout the 80s especially, that was the path that they would take to like cure kids, was to help them mask it better rather than help them work through things and ease into situations. That's a thing that annoys me most probably about this film.
I think, this whole film, it's a road movie, but it's mostly a fish out of water movie.
Yeah.
But it's the worst possible example of that, where you've kidnapped this fish and like...
But also Tom is the fish too. Yeah. He doesn't know what to do in this situation. Everybody is a fish out of water because the point is that he's learning to be a better person. But at the same time, there was some stuff in there. Look, we'll get to that later actually.
Yeah.
But continue. Sorry, I thought of a good point.
That's okay. This is why we knew what we're getting into here, Lauren.
Yes. Don't you worry about that. Oh, our gobs, they be a flapping.
They managed to kind of like get Raymond settled enough, like rearrange some furniture, get him a meal that's close enough to what he's used to. And while he has no book, so normally he would read at night, so they just give him the phone book. They end up fucking. And he hears Susanna making sounds and just goes in and just like goes into their room, watches TV, just copying her sounds that she's making.
Oh, yeah. He's making like echolalia is what it is. So it's like, echolalia or just like also autistic noises. Like if I become nonverbal or distressed, often I'll do like I'll just make little noises because it's the only way I can communicate. It's a strange thing. Not many people get to see that because like obviously I've masked for years, so and it's also it feels embarrassing. Like it's like not fun, especially when you've masked for so long. But yeah, he's distressed, so he starts making like little noises and copying Susanna as well. Yeah, that is a really uncomfortable scene, because then old mate Tom Cruise, once again neglecting that his brother has a disability, just decides to like cut sick.
Yeah, just cuts like, fucking sick, exactly.
And also, their, like, door is open, too. Both their doors are open. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was the thing that pissed me off. I'm like, you want to have sex with someone who you don't know very well, but you know has some sort of disability, so you're just going to leave all the doors open?
Question mark. Like, it's also, it's once again, like, dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Like, it's so rough. That is a very uncomfortable scene.
Especially because you see Tom Cruise do a big cum. Like, you don't actually see anything there under the blankets, but, you know, you see the climax, and you're like, rude.
we're gonna just tense a little bit and we're done. Thank you, Tom Cruise.
Sexy.
He's such a pretty looking boy, but God, I could not get past him.
He's so fucking unlikable in this. It is absolutely shocking. Like,
incredible.
He plays a lot of characters, in especially in the 80s and into the 90s, where he wasn't very likable. He was like a smarmy asshole, but he figured himself out and stopped being such a piece of shit much earlier in all those other movies. Yes. And he still had some sort of charm. In this, he doesn't. Nothing.
No, charmless. Completely charmless. Maybe that was what was so groundbreaking at the time. I mean, also like the Oscar bait being like that able-bodied and also like neurotypical people playing people with disabilities is like, oh boy, that was always Oscar bait.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe this was considered quite a different role for Tom Cruise as well. I don't know. Like,
yeah, maybe.
Who won awards for this one?
Dustin Hoffman did.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember. Hang on, let's have a quick look here.
It is a bit cringe for me to watch because, like, for me, it looks like a parody of somebody. It looks like somebody acting like someone's autistic. To me, that
well,
is.
Well, it's also because it has entered the cultural lexicon so completely that, you know, if you haven't seen this movie, you've seen it, you know, lampooned so much. Like, it's done in The Simpsons. There's one where...
What was The Simpsons one?
When Homer's working at the casino. I don't know if you've seen this episode. So Mr. Burns opens a casino, Homer's working there, and there's a bit where Rain Man and Charlie are there. When Raymond has his meltdown, Homer also has a meltdown at the same time. And so they're both doing
the
exact
hell?
Same meltdown. So it's in so
it's
much.
Like parody. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, man. That's like, it's so rough. Yeah, no, like the autistic experience, especially meltdowns, like hitting your head is like a thing that happens, like depending on how bad your meltdowns are and stuff like that. But watching him do that, I don't know, like it does happen. It's happened to me. I'm when I've been under immense stress and I'm like, do I look like that? And I don't think I do. Or I didn't feel the emotion. I don't know. It's a thing. I just...
All right. So it won Best Oscar for Best Picture, Best Actor in a Leading Role, Dustin Hoffman, Best Director, Best Writing Screenplay. It was also nominated Best Cinematography, Art Direction, Set Decoration, Film Editing, and Music, which is Hans Zimmer. Tom Cruise wasn't nominated.
Wow. I thought the soundtrack was pretty good, actually. I remember thinking...
Oh, Ben... watching it with Ben. Ben was fucking fuming. He hated it so much. Like, I thought he was going...
Really?
To have a fist fight with the television and like the Blu-ray.
I just like the 80s songs. I was like, yeah, nice 80s song, but I don't remember anything else. I was like, do I like the music?
It was like really jaunty, like, because the director,
that's who, right,
I didn't actually mention
it,
the director
felt really weird.
Yeah, Mark Johnson. Yeah. The director, no, sorry, Barry Levinson. Fucking hell, Barry Levinson is the director, and I'm trying to remember what he's done. And nothing else. Wag the Dog, nothing that I give a shit about. But he did not want it to be like lots of string instruments and stuff, because he didn't want it to be like that really, he had a word for it, not whimsy, but like that really like tugging at the, he didn't want the tugging on the heartstrings music.
Oh, okay. Oh, that feels so out of place. Yeah. No, I think I remember thinking there was some music that was out of place, but I liked the 80s song at the beginning. Yeah. I don't remember what a song it was, but that where I was like, oh, sick.
But it was just really weird because this is Hans Zimmer's first big composing job. He's famous for like his big string. Like the time Ben and I wept when we saw Hans Zimmer live and they played the Pirates of the Caribbean music, which normally I'm like, oh, this is a jaunty song.
So good.
But Ben and I were crying. It was so fucking good and fun. We're like,
if we go through pirate phases in our household and we end up watching just the first one again. And
that movie rules.
Kicks off and I start smacking Peter's leg with excitement. It's just like, ooh, and we're like looking at each other like, yeah, this is the best. But I know that feeling. It's like such a good, it's such a good mood. Like right in the, right in the little TikTok, little heart.
Essentially, this scene is just awful because apart from, you know, doing all this fuck shit to Raymond, Susanna's like, you're not listening to me. You've kidnapped this person. You're fucked. And she leaves.
Yes.
Like she,
yes.
And I'm like, yes. Like, how often do you see that?
No, I wrote down, yes, Susanna, dump his ass. Like I wrote that in my notes. I was so chuffed. She's a great character. She's the only redeemable character in this. And then something happens that made me feel really uncomfortable later.
She comes back?
She comes back and something else happened. And I was like, that was weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that. She's great. And it's like, he's not even listening to the most level-headed bobble-headed person in the room, as if he's going to, like, take care of and listen to the needs of a person with an intellectual disability who's his fucking family. Like, his lack of empathy is incredible.
It's,
like,
it's so wild because I think, yeah, she's thought it through and is like, you don't have the ability to deal with this. All he could think about is he wants his part of the inheritance.
Oh, yeah, totally. But yeah, it's like, it's so funny that the position of like, well, often people think that autistic people don't have empathy and it actually doesn't work like that. Sometimes we can struggle with empathy, but we also express empathy differently.
Mm.
So if you're an autistic person like me, the way we often express empathy is rather that when somebody tells you something sad, we won't be like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that and leave it. We go, oh, if we have a relatable moment, we go, oh, I know what that feels like. And we explain our relatable moment, which people go, they just talked about themselves. And it's like, no, 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 you don't understand. This is my way of telling you that I have been through the same experience. So I do know how you feel. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously very different with Raymond.
I do that a bit too. Like I always think of relatable things and I'm like, oh, I'm talking about my...
It's not uncommon.
But I would say...
And it's not a bad thing either.
From knowing you all these years, I would say you're a very empathetic person.
Aha, well, here's the thing. So you can either be not empathetic enough or on the autistic spectrum, you can be too empathetic to the point where it affects your life. But for this reason, a lot of autistic people are in activism because they care so much.
Ah.
Explains a lot, doesn't
yes.
it? So like a lot of autistic people like trying to help refugees, trying to help the feminist movement, trying to help, you know,
climate change.
It's incredible. Yes, exactly. Because they give such a shit, like they feel it in their bones that they care so much. Whereas most people are like, eh, and they just worry about their little circle. And that's fine too. Like, this is just the broad human experience.
Mm.
Except if you're a giant multi-billion CEO, in which case you're a lizard person.
Eat shit and die, cunts. How about that? Chop your heads off.
I don't want to see your fucking billboards in space.
Fucking dead shits.
You piece of shit. Absolutely.
I'm going up there. If they start doing that, I'm going to space and I'm fucking knocking those signs down somehow.
Punch it
out
of the sky.
Get my space car and fucking ram them.
Mate, we can't even go to Williamstown Titanic. There's no way we're getting to space.
Just look that up, Williamsburg Titanic restaurant. And
please look up Williamstown Titanic. You are in for a fucking treat. Google that shit.
So the next morning.
She dumps his ass.
Yeah, she dumps his ass. Next morning, they go to a cafe for breakfast. This is where we see a little bit more of Raymond's behaviours, where he expects the maple syrup to be on the table before the pancakes arrive, and Charlie is so fucking dismissive.
So relatable. So he gets really fussy about it, which is, it's normal for autistic people.
Yeah, he displays more of his savant, you know, characteristics. So it was Bonnie Hunt, wasn't it? The waitress, like just a tiny bit role.
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So you can see her name on her tag and Raymond knows her phone number because he got to the letter G in the phone book. And she's like, I loved how she wasn't that weirded out. She was just like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Oh yeah, no, it's just like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I don't know. Once again, proving that everybody else in this world, except for Tom Cruise,
is a reasonable human being,
perfectly decent person. Yeah, hurrah!
So, because Raymond likes eating his food with toothpicks. What's his name? Charlie eventually gets some from the waitress, but she's bumped and knocks them all. And Raymond looks down at the ground and actually can immediately count how many toothpicks on the ground.
Oh yeah, including four in the box.
Yeah, and he's like, 246, and he's like, oh, there's 250 in the box. And Charlie's like, you were nearly there. And she's like, oh, there's four in the box still. And he's like, I don't care. I'm a yuppie and I like cars. So, because I know if I'd been there, I'd be like, wait a minute, you just fucking, I'd be like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, anyway, but no, Charlie's too busy worrying about his own shit.
But worried about his own big old fat head being a big old selfish ego man.
Oh, I also like in this scene, Charlie grabs Raymond really roughly and like does that mean little thing at him. And then Raymond's immediately like writes it in his serious injuries book. He's like, on this this serious injury. Good.
Absolutely.
You should all do that.
That would be considered
a
serious
book of
like
people who wrong us.
Oh, like, what makes you think I did? Remember I had Kill the Batman on my thing for ages because of that YouTube dude.
That's
remember?
Right.
I won't say what their name was, but I cannot stand that someone like that exists. But I was like, oh man. It was just there to remind me of how annoying that was. I wasn't going to do anything about it. I was just like, oh, remember that? Yes, we will kill the Batman. Mate, I wish I had my journal from when I was like, oh, I have a journal somewhere here. Peter, I was showing it to Peter. It was like my early teen. I must have been like 11 or 12. In this journal, I have written like villains, and it is no joke, like number one villain, Darth Vader, Liquid Snake from Metal Gear Solid, Nasty Nork, and then it gets down to number one and it just says Osama bin Laden. What the hell? I mean, like, Peter's he's like, whoa, that dialed up to reality real quick. I was 12. I didn't know. I just ran out of villains that I liked.
Right, that fucking 9/11 was dreadful.
I'm just a child. Oh, I've heard that man's very bad on the news. Like, that him and Darth Vader, ooh, they're real bad. Like, all right, so he's like Sirius Indru's book. I loved that, actually, because I like that he documents. And it shows, once again, he has feelings. Like, it immediately shows he has feelings, which Tom Cruise neglects.
Yeah.
Once again, neglects. It's like, Charlie feels wronged. So, in his own way, he's going to express that.
Yeah.
And you are just going to ignore it. I suppose as well, at this stage, Tom Cruise thinks that he's, or Charlie Babbitt thinks that he's going to be over and done with this in a mere matter of days.
Yeah.
Or, like, moments, even. But, obviously, you know, a little bit different.
He's bitten off more than he can chew, and it takes him a long time to fucking realize this. So the plan is he's going to get the car shipped back home to, they must be in LA, and they're going to catch a plane back to LA. So, because it's actually quite a distance, like they're in Cincinnati, they've been in Cincinnati, which is, I worked it out, a really long way. But Raymond is absolutely terrifying of flying because he has memorized all of the plane crashes,
all the statistics. Yeah.
So when Charlie's like, well, what about Delta? And he's like, he remembers the very last accident that's happened.
Delta flight. Yeah.
So this is I love this bit so much as Australians. The only airline that Raymond would be comfortable with is Qantas. Apparently, so there's a few little fun trivia about that. Apparently Qantas had some minor accidents, but never on a commercial jet, like just on like smaller.
Oh, interesting.
You know. So he was kind of right in that. Apparently the director or whoever wrote the script actually just winged that and just made that up. And it's like, I don't think Qantas has had, but they were mostly right.
Wow.
And another fun fact is anytime this movie was played on airlines, all other airlines except Qantas edit that scene out. And like their excuse is because, well, no one wants to hear about planes crashing when they're watching a plane on the flight.
No, you can't.
But Qantas are like, nice. Don't even worry about it. It's us, Qantas.
It's so funny what they edit out of in-flight films. Somebody I know was watching Super 8 and they edit the train crash out. That's the train.
Literally the best bit.
I know. I have lots of things I like about that film. It falls a bit flat, but it's pretty enjoyable. But that bit, like, that train crash is epic.
Mm.
It's so good. And I'm pretty sure they edited it out.
Cool.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool, I guess. Like,
that's why I usually watch movies that I already know on plane, or play movies that I would never watch at home. And that way I don't give a shit. Yeah. But like, I would never watch a movie.
How many people watch
Avatar on planes for the first time? And I don't know if it's an ongoing joke with everyone, but I hear a lot of people talk about it. Can you imagine that? It's like
flying through the air.
James Cameron's like, I want everyone to see this on IMAX and big 3D screens. And someone's like, I'm going to watch it on my phone or on my tiny...
I always thought Avatar was the first 3D film I ever saw in cinema, but the first 3D film I ever saw in cinema was, Final Destination. I want to say it might have been 4 or 5, but it's the one with the race car track. Are you a Final Destination fan?
Of course I am. I don't think I've seen them all.
Course you are. The one with the racetrack was great. Like, that has some great scenes to watch in 3D. It's absolutely
some
disgusting.
Some bloody sick cars coming flying at the screen.
Yes! I was watching it and I was like, yeah, hell yeah, 3D. And I was sitting with my friend Simon. It started and the music was really loud and we were like, yeah, car racing. So you get like that adrenaline rush of watching Bogan things because you're from the Gold Coast. And we looked at one another and we like nodded and we looked back at the screen and like the bolt like flew at the screen. And I, no joke, both of us were like, whoa, like our hands went back. Like it was like, yes, I am a dickhead. Good times. Anyway, moving on.
Basically, Charlie tries to get him on the plane and this is the first time we see Raymond have a proper meltdown.
Yes.
Because, yeah, it's one thing to, like, not let him have toothpicks and all that, but, like, to force someone onto an airplane that they're fucking terrified of. Luckily, Charlie realizes he can't. I mean, I think it's mostly out of embarrassment because everyone's looking.
Yeah. The other thing about meltdowns is it's usually an amalgamation of things building up. It's never just, like, this moment. Like, that might just tip him over the edge. But it's, like, I guess it's, like, spoon theory. Like, if you wake up with so many spoons in a day, do you know spoon theory?
Yep.
Yeah, so you wake up with so many spoons in a day and, you know, you got dressed so that if you're autistic, that might cost 2 spoons as opposed to costing 1 spoon and you have a shower or you have a shower and you get dressed and that's like 3 spoons, you know? So with Raymond, it's like, well, with the autistic experience, like it's about sort of like spending your energy where you can and not overstimulating yourself. Like it's an amalgamation of things. Like he's already kidnapped him, stressed him out beyond belief. I feel like had he just not been a big piece of shit this whole time, he could have maybe convinced him.
Yeah.
Because Charlie is really unreasonable and Raymond isn't unreasonable.
Mm.
Like he's just autistic. He's not, you know, it's like he just, yeah, he communicates, I think, really effectively.
Yeah.
And it's just Charlie, like, ignoring his shit once again.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically the plan is now that they have to drive all the way to LA, which is going to take, it will take a couple of days, except it's going to take a little bit longer because they do actually encounter a accident and Raymond is absolutely terrified.
That stresses him out. Yeah,
so stressed.
Yeah.
And so they now have to do back roads. And I'll give Charlie one thing is that he actually is like, okay, we're doing back roads then. Like, he doesn't put up much of a fight.
No, it's like he starts like, I guess, like, leaning into, like the path of least resistance for his own, I guess it's, but it feels like for his own benefit, not so much Raymond's. Yeah, that I, you know, is this change or is this just, I'm a piece of shit who doesn't want to deal with this?
Yeah, I mean, we know what the answer is there.
Yeah, piece of shit answer. Yeah, absolutely. I like all of the shots of, like, I love America.
Mm.
I love how America looks. I love small towns.
On 80s America, like,
all of that stuff.
So good.
I love it. So, yeah, I love small stop-ins. I love roadside attractions. Like, I have a love for, like, the culture of the US and driving and road trip films.
Mm.
That's something I really enjoyed about this movie. I'll say that for sure.
And it's very core. It's a road trip movie, and that aspect of it is really nice.
Really pretty, yeah. And the shots are really nice. Yeah.
Okay, well, we've reviewed a bit of the movie.
Oh, we have. I'd say that's a very positive spot to leave
off
on.
Yeah, I think
well.
We are going to leave it here. And it's also because this is where it truly becomes a road movie. Like, we're building up to it becoming a road movie, and now it's about to become a road movie. We obviously have a lot more to talk about and a lot more movie to get through, so we're going to pause it there. So if in the meantime, if you'd like to find me on social media, it is Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram, Tom Cruise Review, no S on the end, on Twitter, and everything else is on my website, tomcruisereviews.com. Thank you, Lauren, for helping me get through this very in-depth discussion of autism and Tom Cruise being a shit cunt. We will continue. We'll continue next week. We'll catch you then. Da, 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 da.